Adventures.
Yeah, we definitely could do the intro now. You know what I really want to compliment is that score you just heard from Natalie Holt, which is probably maybe my favorite MCU score yet that they've done. The score for this show is, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really good in all the different ways that she did variants, no pun intended or pun intended, on the score and all the different kind of places Loki went. They did little change-ups and different versions of it, which I really enjoyed. We're talking about variants, so I think you guys know what we're talking about. This is our special Loki episode, Page Turners. So we really miss comics, and I know I really enjoyed this. I know we've all really enjoyed the Loki show, and I know we're all kind of eager to talk about comics again. And we all thought this show was fantastic, so we kind of ended up doing something different and talking about the Loki TV show, which was created and written by Michael Waldron for Disney, and each episode was directed by Kate Herron, and the music, which I just said, was done by Natalie Holt. This was the, I know Chaz, it was great. You finally finished it today. I've been kind of like waiting to talk to Chaz the last, it seems like a week, but it's only been like 3 days about the finale because of how much I enjoyed it. And what you said is true. It's the most comic booky thing I've seen in a while. The end, without getting into it yet, was so Jack Kirby, like comics I read as a kid or comics that I read now to kind of zone out and just trip on nostalgia, that it literally made me feel like a kid again watching that season finale, which is the stuff that really works for me in comic book adaptations. Whereas I think you saw Black Widow too. Did you see it? We could talk about that a little bit too. I feel like it was good. I don't think it was as nowhere nearly as successful for me as Loki was. Loki was through the roof for me. And I think this is my favorite Marvel TV show yet. What did you guys think of it?
I got to say, I'm glad that we're indulging in our own little Nexus event here, breaking away from the comics tradition to talk about TV, because this Loki show was the business, man. It's real good. And a heads up for listeners out there, this is going to be like really filled with spoilers. And I doubt any of y'all are like behind the ball on this one. Like if you are, don't keep listening. Unless you really don't care. And why would you not? But we're really going to, I mean, like, we're definitely going to spoil the shit out of this thing. Because it's so good. We got to talk about it.
There's not really any way not to and get past the first 10 minutes of the show.
I mean, like, we could try, but it's going to be pretty hard. Yeah, that finale was for sure.
We're going to have to spoil the hell out of it.
It's the most comic booky hour of TV I've seen in a long time. Actually, I can't think of another one, really. And it's solid. There were a few times, Michael Waldron, he's a Rick and Morty guy. So for me, there were a few times where it felt like I could substitute Loki for Rick. And it still kind of played the same.
The entire show.
Yeah, but funny, heart-filled, action-packed, fucking coolest shit sci-fi, and Owen Wilson. So, like, checked, like, every box in my book.
I was so when I heard he was in it. And he didn't disappoint. He was my favorite, character in it.
Yeah, the...
I know. Me too.
I loved Owen Wilson. I've missed Owen Wilson so much. The last, like, good dose of Owen Wilson I got was on Documentary Now, where he was fantastic in... Batshit Country, their take on Wild Country, which he was just fantastic in that and really funny. And it's really good to see him in this and doing something different. I'm really we'll just gonna explore. I was just gonna mention one thing I really love about this stuff, which I didn't really bring up, is how powerful the journey of Loki's character arc is in this. Because we start out with Loki and he's literally still Avengers 1 Loki. He just tried to basically take over the world with the Cosmic Cube. He tried to kill the Avengers. He lost. And just basically with one episode, they kind of turn his character around. And then by the end of the show, he's literally throwing away the first love he's ever had in his life, even though how narcissistic that is, and we'll get into that more. He's willing to throw away the first love he's ever found for the lives of everyone in the universe, which is a huge character growth moment, from wanting to take over the universe to sacrificing the only thing you've found to really care about for everyone else in the universe besides yourself. So, I mean, that's kind of the great journey that Loki takes us on with the character. Tom Hiddleston is such
a
great actor.
I was going to say, to like piggyback on what you're saying there, I was almost upset because we did, over the course of the last 25 MCU movies, and I know it's not that many, I'm exaggerating, but like over the course of his whole journey, we really got to see Loki grow and change to the point where like he does die for Thor. You know what I mean? Like, that's a really powerful moment. He's usually the one to go run away and hide. So when we get this Loki before all of that development, I was really afraid that it was not going to be a joy to watch because like he'd taken 18 steps backwards in his like development that we've experienced over the course of all of that. So the fact that they were able to do the same thing that they did over the course of the last like 12 years in 6 episodes, incredible.
Yeah, really impressive. And they do like a lot of it is just in the first episode when he meets Mobius M. Mobius, Wilson's fantastic TVA agent character, because the main plot, which I'm sure all of you have watched it, so I'm not going to dive into it too deep, but Loki gets taken because he's branched off a timeline by stealing the Cosmic Cube when he should have gone off and been, you know, imprisoned on Asgard. And he gets the TVA, which is the Time Variance Authority, who kind of keep the multiverse in check and keep it as one multiverse. I mean, one universe instead of the multiverse. They kind of keep all time flowing in one direction. But that Owen Wilson, first episode, Owen Wilson kind of meets him and kind of just has met many Lokis because there's so many variants that he knows Tom Hiddleston's MO so well. But, you know, Hiddleston's just meeting him. And then him kind of discovering, like, what his life's purpose is to be is to, like, finally kind of change and then die immediately afterwards. And his mom dying is kind of what I think gives him the jolt to change quicker when he finds out that's kind of his glorious purpose, as the first episode is titled.
Betrayal. That's his glorious purpose.
He's a scoundrel.
That's what he's good at. But I did like, once they catch him, it's sort of the cop and the crook sort of show. You know what I mean? It's that idea of like, we need you. You got the inside scoop on how we can catch this other one. We're going to use you for now. So you're under arrest, but you help us out and maybe you'll get out. And there's a lot of things, even like lines of dialogue in this show that sound familiar, that sound lifted out of other things. And I could never tell if it was intentional, like they were playing off of a movie or something, or if it's just incidental because of the way that it's set up.
I see that. Yeah, the first two episodes are definitely like MCU's version of 48 Hours. Where like there's a cop that takes a criminal to have him work on a case. No one trusts the criminal, but the criminal's getting more done than the
second
cops
episode.
Done the entire
the
time.
The second episode when they're investigating the like carnival, the big house, like the big tent scene. That shit is ripped straight out of Hannibal. Like the TV show. When Loki's like, the design is me and I am the design or whatever. If you go out those doors, you'll die. And he gives him this big long speech about like the power and the whatever. And the whole time I was like, all right, Will Graham, you calm down there.
Oh, yeah.
But then Mobius just being like, he's lying. Just so choice. Like, undercuts this big serious thing that I also was thinking like, he's just fucking around. But then to have somebody else call him on his bullshit immediately is so satisfying and hilarious.
I would love to insert Owen Wilson now in old Hannibal episodes when Will Graham's going on about his mind palace and Owen Wilson just coming and go, you're lying.
Like, oh, no. He's lying. Fucking Will Graham has much reason to lie.
He's so good.
Yeah, that would be great.
Will Graham is not yet trying to escape the TVA yet. There might be Will Graham, the William Peterson Will Graham from Manhunter that's trapped somewhere from the TVA now.
Oh, that's for sure. He's the one writing like how to catch people, like books.
I really want to dive into the last episode first, but talk about the whole that. It's just like I said earlier. There's so much Kirby-esque stuff in this. With just the gods of Asgard and just the multiverse, just the Journey into Mystery, which has been one of my favorite Marvel titles several times, is aptly named the fifth episode, which I still think might be my favorite, which is an episode where you get to see lots of Loki variants work with Loki, and it's kind of just like a comic book nerd pick and pull from all the stuff going on in the void. I mean, there's so much.
Yeah.
I mean, there's the Thanos copter, which is great.
That one felt like very important to me. All the wacky different Lokis.
Keep
like,
talking. I'm going to find it.
Jumping through portals, fighting each other, like bickering.
So, Jack, you might not know this, but in the 70s, when Thanos was a bad guy, he used to fly around a yellow helicopter. That was a Thanos copter.
No. Just once.
Okay. Chaz is.
Just once.
Chaz has it.
And only in.
Is it Iron Man or no?
There it is. No. It's in Spidey Super Stories number 39.
Oh, awesome. And that's.
Yeah. So this is like an all ages book where Spider-Man and Hellcat team up to stop Thanos from getting the cosmic cube. and Thanos tries to escape in the Thanos copter, which is just totally a yellow ridiculous. Helicopter that says Thanos on the tail. He gets beat. He has the fucking cosmic cube in his hand, which can change reality or whatever, right? And he has to lose because it's a kid's book. So I get it. But he gets beat. Regular police come and arrest him with regular handcuffs. And two regular human people walk Thanos away from the scene as, like, Hellcat and Spider-Man are like, this cube is pretty crazy, huh? It's the wildest issue I've ever read.
Can you imagine Tom Holland teaming up with, what's her name, Rachel? Her name's escaping me, but Hellcat and Jessica Jones teaming up against Josh Brolin, Thanos.
In like a cartoony Sesame Street kind of vibe. Yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be wild. That episode is littered with stuff like
yeah.
that. I do agree with you though, Jack. That is like the Rick and Morty-ish.
Definitely. And it had like the Blade Runner music Lokis. Playing like that. that was sick.
Yeah. The fact that some of the Lokis have experienced such growth and then to contrast them with an army of Lokis that immediately backstab each other left, right, and center was so great.
Yeah, because
it's my army. Just kidding. It's my army. And they're like, are you kidding me? And all I could think was like, they're going to kill each other before they even fight our heroes. This is awesome.
I love that our Loki, and then when this is all going on, when President Loki and Boastful Loki are all backstabbing each other down there, and Loki's just kind of staring at them like, What is this nonsense? How do I do this all the time? Why do I keep doing this? And then the ones with the most growth are Kid Loki, Classic Loki, and Alligator Loki also has grown to get past the betrayal.
It felt like you got to see Tom Hiddleston read old status updates from his Facebook and be like, the fuck was I thinking? that was the visual that I was like, oof, he's... I've come so far, and I'm so embarrassed of myself.
That's all of us. Like, if I time traveled right now 10 years ago to myself, I'd probably end up punching myself. There's so much growth that happens in life.
Social media posts. That's what happens whenever you go on Facebook, and they have that damn Facebook memories feature. It's like, this is something you said 11 years ago, and it's totally stupid.
Yeah. Hey, do you still feel the same as you did then? And I'm like... What the fuck does this even mean now? No,
so
I don't.
So we probably mention the fact that, you know, the story starts with Loki getting scooped up to this place called the TVA where he's put on trial because he's a quote-unquote variant, and so they're going to kill him, and then Owen Wilson's like, hey, no, don't kill him. I got a project for him. And then he's like, okay, so a variant is when somebody is going to do something that's going to create a divergence in the quote-unquote sacred timeline, and the TVA, the time something authority, time variation authority, time variant. Okay, time variants authority are trying to stop that, but I don't want you to kill, or I don't want to kill you, I want you to go travel through time and kill yourself. Literally. A different version, though. And
help
he's like, oh, yeah, sure.
Help Why you not? Catch you.
And that
stops me from getting destroyed.
That introduces us to our second lead, who is a standout for me as well on this show, who is Sylvie, who is the female Loki, who's kind of a amalgamation of Sylvie from the comic books with female Loki and also with Enchantress. And she was fantastic. I've never seen the actress in anything before, and I thought she did a really great job. And the chemistry between her and Hiddleston's like through the roof. They do a really good job at first kind of fighting each other, and she's kind of got Loki on the ropes because she knows how to enchant people and stuff like that. So she's our classic Loki, but not the classic Loki that Richard E. Grant plays, is kind of, you know, on the ropes with her and trying to figure out what she's doing. And they start as kind of enemies, then immediately bond, which, you know, it gets deeper and deeper throughout the season. And their whole relationship is kind of the heart of the series. And I was not even expecting that. I thought I knew what this show was going to be about before I watched it, but they did a really good job of hiding pretty much everything that was actually going on in the show.
Come in here and let me finish this thought. I was thinking about the fact that, it's super sick that Disney had some representation for the LGBTQ by Loki saying that he's bi, and the male Loki and the female Loki, Sylvie. But then also I thought it was funny that they chose to do that, but then have his love interest be a woman. But then I thought about it more on that too, and his love interest is the female Loki, who's a woman, but it has a woman, like, shapeshifted into a woman and was born a man and identifies as a woman. So then Loki's also has a trans love interest by that definition. And then Marvel fanboys that are toxic, some of them are going, Loki would never be bi. That doesn't make any sense. That's not canon. But also, if you look at ancient mythology canon, Loki had babies with a horse. So...
Well, also, those fanboys are idiots because in the comics, he's stated he's pansexual and he's gender fluid. So that's just...
They're just dudes that are toxic.
That's just dudes that... Those are the same dudes. Those are the same dudes that are out right now assaulting people outside of that spa in L.A.
And Loki also did, in Norse mythology, have a whole bunch of babies with a horse.
Yeah.
The fastest horse in all the realms with six legs.
Oh, cool. They stated that Loki is bi. But also they have him with a woman. But also that woman is himself and a man by birth. Not a man, but like by birth. So trans. So there's that interesting evolution in thinking about that.
Yeah, I think
you can.
No, go ahead, Chess.
You can only learn to love once you've loved yourself.
literally, in
the, unfortunately,
once you've
there
loved your Sylvie,
like, Buffalo Bill,
you can love another.
Would you fuck me? I'd fuck me. Moment.
I don't. The gazes that they were throwing each
I don't believe that. But there should have been something more direct.
I love that gaze in episode 3 is brought up at the end again by our big bad. And he goes, that look by the lake, just because there was such an obvious look.
Yeah.
Can we jump ahead and just talk about him a little bit and then talk about the overview of the show? Because that, I really love that performance. I don't know if you guys are as warm on Jonathan Majors' performance in this. The spoilers, if you're still listening and you feel like you haven't spoiled enough, we're literally going to spoil the next phase of the MCU, what's going on with it. But I will suggest, if you're listening to us and you haven't watched Loki and you plan to go see Spider-Man in December or Doctor Strange in March, you should probably watch Loki, because I have a really big feeling that you won't know what the hell is going on if you don't. So you should probably watch it, because... Unlike Falcon and the Winter Soldier, which I don't think had much relevance on the MCU, except, there's a new Captain America, but then again, you also see there's a new Captain America kind of crowned at the end of Endgame. Endgame. I mean, I think a kid could watch Endgame and see the end of that and then be like, that's when Sam became Captain America. I feel like it's not as much of a disconnect.
Without... I don't know. Without Falcon and Winter Soldier, we would not have gotten the sweet...
Oh, Val.
And this is in addition to Black Widow.
Yeah.
I was going to say, we would not have gotten what is the beginning of essentially the Dark Avengers, I think. So, it's going to be... I think that one will come to have much more relevance. It doesn't have the big universe-shattering implications that both Loki and all these multiverse having Quantumania... rumbling movies do, but I have a feeling that there's going to be a lot more going on that Falcon and Winter Soldier will be important for.
I agree with you, but I think that'll be farther down. I'm talking about like the next direct movies, but you're right. Dark Avengers definitely is happening, and I do love Val. So I'm not saying you shouldn't watch Falcon and Winter Soldier. I just feel like if you didn't watch Falcon
and Winter Soldier... A guy dressed like Captain America cut a dude's head off in front of everybody.
Yeah, that did happen.
That's going to have some pretty fucking big ramifications, regardless of it being Sam Wilson now. People are going to look at Captain America a lot different, and at America a lot different, and even probably at the Avengers a lot different, because ain't nobody else even showed up. You know what I mean? They had to go fight all this shit all on their own, and it's just two dudes. Like,
Daniel Brühl was awesome.
Eventually, there's going to be...
As Baron Zemo.
Yeah, there's going to be that fallout.
Yeah. Yeah. He was great. That dance was great. I liked all of them. I would probably put Falcon... I don't know. I feel like almost WandaVision and Falcon Winter Soldier, for me, are almost equal. WandaVision is a little bit better to me, but I feel like this one's high above both of those. But that's just... It gets the most comic booky, as you said, and me as someone that prefers comic book as my choice of entertainment is what makes this one really kind of work for me, because it's the most like reading an actual comic book. So...
It leans into the craziness that comics can provide. Falcon and Winter Soldier felt like a Brubaker Captain America story.
There's a New York Times article with that Brubaker that was just printed yesterday about...
Oh, for real?
Yeah, he's real mad at Marvel. He's
I imagine
real loud about how they've given him no money for any of these movies. And then Jim Starlin said he got paid out pretty well for Guardians and Thanos, because he made a scene and talked, and I guess he told that Brubaker that you got to be the squeaky wheel if you want to get fixed. And I think Brubaker made the mistake of, instead of going to Marvel, he decided to go to the press, whereas Jim Starlin went to Marvel, and he said they gave him quite a lot of money because he went and talked to Kevin Feige, whereas Brubaker decided to go to all these news outlets. So we'll see how that plays out, instead of just kind of...
Yeah. Did it mention anything in his contract about ownership of the characters or anything that's kind of the shitty part about comic books now, is that you're playing with somebody else's toys, regardless of what you did to them.
Reading it even says that all Marvel contracts today state that if you create a character for them, they own the character, but every contract can be renegotiated at all times. So any contract you sign, if you create a character and they go in a movie, if you go and talk to them, they usually can work with you, because in the contract it says it can be renegotiated any time. So if they put the character in a $100 million making movie, they can then give you more money because it can be renegotiated, which is what Jim Starlin said. Jim Starlin said they paid him handsomely for Infinity War, that he's very happy. And then he did say he's going to go to them again for Shang-Chi, because he created Shang-Chi and he hasn't got really anything for that yet. But this is a really interesting article. I feel kind of bad for Brubaker, but is this also like, is he taking the right approach, or is, I don't know, if going to New York Times and all these press outlets, but it's kind of a lot of other comic creators kind of coming out and saying that's why they've left the big two. People like Rick Remender's been making comments about it. People that, you know, I kind of miss writing big two characters, but it does suck. But I mean, I gotta say, as a fan, I'm on the outside looking in, I really know nothing about this, and I love all these creators, but... I just feel like it's the opportunity to work. I feel like most creators have to know, right? I don't want to get in their mindset, but I feel like they have to know when they work on a Marvel book. If they create a character, they're kind of giving it away, right?
That's my guess.
I don't want to say Ed Brubaker definitely knew, but I feel like he would have known, right? Well, I mean, he worked
like
mostly
if
indie stuff.
The character, then there's no reason they shouldn't have at least some.
No, I agree. They should get the money. I'm not talking about the money. I'm just saying that I feel like it's like
I mean, Brubaker got that sweet cameo.
Big Two does this.
Winter Soldier.
That's the joke he made in New York Times. He said he's made more off residuals from his cameo. He said he's made more off his residuals in that cameo than he's ever got from Marvel, whether working for them or for Winter Soldier. which is pretty wild, which is crazy.
But
yeah,
that's the contracts, man.
And Ta-Nehisi Coates came out.
That's the same reason that what's it called? Neil Gaiman and Todd McFarlane sued each other for forever because of the way that the contract was worded about working for hire, and you create a character in my book and it's my character. So I don't know. I'm not saying anybody did anything wrong, but a big corporation is gonna, yeah. A big corporation though is gonna want its money. You know what I mean? Yeah. And they might be generous on the back end, like you're saying. Like they could renegotiate it for sure. That's cool, but like in the immediate, they're gonna say you're playing with them. You give it a different name. That's cool. That makes us more money. That's cool too. You want some of that money? Well, I guess we got to figure that out. But yeah, I don't know. I guess that's the problem with playing with other people's toys. That's the problem with copyright overall.
Yeah, and then
just imagine if no long copyright law, we could have had some weird ass Spider-Man movie just because some guy would be like, I'm going to make a dope Spider-Man movie and just do it and be cool. There's a multiverse.
I'm sure there'd be a lot of Spider-Man movies.
Yeah, because everybody's probably got a cool vision about it. They're not all going to be cool.
The multiverse with the James Cameron Spider-Man movie with Leonardo DiCaprio that almost happened. There's definitely a multiverse that actually went through. Yeah,
Spider-Man's going to fight Predator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're not too far off, Jack. That they're actually probably going to do that soon.
Yeah.
Really?
They own Fox, so it's only a matter of time. True. Yeah.
When are they going to do all those fucking...
It'll be Kraven versus Predator, deadly game.
They have Alien comics
DC
right now.
DC that did all the Predator crossovers, not Marvel.
Back in the day,
I was going to say it would be hella funny if they started doing a bunch of like Alien or Predator crossover MCU stuff.
They can't even do Alien and Predator crossover together well yet.
No.
So it's going to be real, real crazy for them to mix some other characters they don't fucking understand in there.
Predator good yet.
Yeah, if Shane Black drops the ball so hard on a movie that should have been good, Fred Decker wrote it. I mean, on paper, that movie should have been fantastic. And then middle feels a lot like Fred Decker. I will give it that, but you can definitely tell it was heavily reshot.
The next Avengers film, Avengers fight Alien and Predator.
Instead of the Chitauri, the fucking whatever, the Yutani, whatever the fucking name for the Predator is. Yeah, they fucking come through the rift and they're just like, they disappear right away. Everybody's like, what the fuck? They could be everywhere. Yeah. Secret invasion. It's predators.
The Human Torch would have to come through for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was strange to me. Yeah, we kind of diverged a lot. Yeah.
Wait, what were you going to say about Coates?
Oh, I would say he came out and he was basically stating, like, I think, you know, that the original Black Panther writers should get more money for Black Panther because I guess it never happened. But then he said, like, I'm very happy working for Marvel because it's enough for me because I'm not a comic book writer by living. I'm a screenwriter. And he said, I don't know how you could live as a comic book writer for a living like Ed does. And he says, I feel very bad for him because that's how he makes a living. And it's not a good living. And he said he basically would be homeless if he lived off his comic book writer wages, which... that's scary. I like want to be a comic writer, and then I'm like, what? Is that bad? Like,
he doesn't put out as many books as Brubaker does either, though.
Yeah, that's true.
He's been on Captain America for like
3 years.
Yeah, and he's only got 25 issues out.
Yeah.
That's like a whole year off, basically.
Yeah.
Kept to a full month schedule. And then he was doing Black Panther Forever, which was real crazy, but because he was really like infusing a bunch of ideas into it. But I don't know. And the original, I mean, like, if he's saying the original creators of Black Panther, that's Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. They're both gone now. Yeah. Can't give them any more money.
Yeah, that's the statement he made, though, which... Yeah. Does he know that?
What the MCU is going to do about Black Panther?
I know they're making the sequel, Wakanda Forever, which...
Yeah, but are they going to... What are they going to do about... fucking Bozeman being dead.
There was a massive leak a few months ago, and some of the things have come true, specifically Richard E. Grant's character in Loki. But that could have been, I think, almost guessing that he would be a different Loki, but we didn't really know that much about it yet. But there's a crazy leak that says that Michael B. Jordan is going to come back and be the new Black Panther, and that he didn't actually die at the end of Black Panther. And for some reason, they might go that direction because the director is like Michael B. Jordan's best friend. Michael B. Jordan's a great actor. They kind of had to deal with something that no one could predict. So I feel like you do only see him pass out at the end of Black Panther. There could be like he took them to that. What's that thing that T'Challa found bad and took him to those healing?
Healing gardens or whatever.
Healing garden, yeah.
Yeah.
No one dies in Wakanda. Wakanda forever.
My personal choice is I'd pick M'Baku. I think he'd be a fucking sweet new Black Panther, or Shuri. But I have a feeling those hateful fanboys, which I'm going to talk about again in a second, and they're already kind of vitriol or screaming on the internet about it not being Shuri, even though she's been Black Panther in the comics, is, as we've seen before with Disney, they will back up from the alt-right if they think it's going to make them lose some ticket sales. That they try to do like right in the middle.
Oh yeah. Never expect anything more than like moderate from Disney.
Yeah. That's just only because they want to get money from everyone. It's not because they're choosing a side. It's just because they want to get money from both sides.
If anything, Disney does own Fox News. So they don't.
No, they don't. No, Murdoch.
Yeah, that's a separate part.
It's separate. Yeah. Murdoch kept Fox News. Murdoch just sold a film company, yeah, and FX. He sold them FX and the film company and the film characters. He kept all the sports networks and he kept Fox News.
Huh.
Still owned by billionaire, rich conservative Rupert Murdoch.
Yeah. I mean, they don't have to do that, though, either. You know what I mean? Like, they don't have to play to the middle. Like Elvis Presley's manager selling I Hate Elvis buttons. The people still had to go to the show to buy that button that said I Hate Elvis.
Yeah.
They're still going to go see this movie, so they have the fucking, well, I got to be able to back up my argument. This scene of the movie. So, like, they can make it however they want. You know what I mean? And then I'm not saying all press is good press, right? But, like, I hear that some fucking shithole online from the alt-right is like, that fucking sucks. I'm like two times more likely to go see it now because that means it's probably going to be pretty tight for me. You know what
exactly,
I mean?
Exactly, yeah.
So it's kind of, no matter what, I think if I learn that alt-right dudes hate it, I'm going to be like, tight. I'm going
to
go watch it.
Okay, so I wanted to look this one up. Okay, so
I agree.
There was something else I wanted to add about Fox News and Disney before. But I wanted to look it up because I was wrong about the other one, which I also looked that up and I am wrong. But Fox is Fox News is legally like registered as entertainment, and so they do not have to legally fact check anything they say.
Okay. No.
Just like our podcast. Crazy.
Yeah.
Just like our podcast.
Rupert Murdoch pisses his pants daily.
No, but yes, you can look it up. Fox News is not legally a news network. It's an entertainment network, and they can say whatever they want with no legal repercussions.
That's crazy.
Except they did get sued for defamation by the voting booth company.
Yeah, like $1 billion.
Yeah, smart. Crazy, right?
Yeah, that's just recently, right? Didn't that just happen, like... the last few weeks? A couple months ago?
Yeah, a couple months ago. Or I don't know when it got settled pretty recently, but...
Either way, I'd be pretty excited for Black Panther. I just threw out, before we started recording, another Oakland native, like Ryan Coogler, would be Rafael Cazal, a guy who created Blindspotting. I think he'd also make an excellent Reed Richards. He has a really good Reed Richards face. Like, he might have the most Reed Richards face I've ever seen. And he's a good actor. And he could sing. Maybe Reed will sing in one of them. One of his alternate variants will be a crooner, and he could, Rafael Cazal can drop a number. But that's just me, because I was raised in the Bay Area, so I'm like, that would be cool. That guy lives in Oakland still. You could go visit Reed Richards in Oakland.
Hell yeah.
I just seen it. I see it.
That'd be pretty great.
So I'd be happy whatever they do with the Black Panther. I'd be happy if they don't even do a new Black Panther, and that's why it's called Wakanda Forever, and they kind of just, you know... I mean, spoiler also, if you don't not in the end, but the movie's about them fighting with Atlantis, which we're going to finally get Namor.
Oh, boy.
Which that's another thing people are going to start flipping out about, because they cast a Latino actor as Namor, so... I mean, the alt-right guys are definitely going to have their knives out already. It doesn't matter because he's Atlantean. Who cares? It does not matter. It does not matter ever.
Atlantean is a real race, Michael.
Yeah. Is that what they're going to tell me? They're going to be like, Atlanteans are definitely white. I'm going to be like, what?
I can't believe
you'll
it.
You'll see it.
Well, and this all diverts into what we were saying. I was going to bring up is the big bad is revealed to be He Who Remains, who is a version of Nathaniel Richards. It's kind of a version of Immortus mixed with the actual He Who Remains. So it's a variant of Kang the Conqueror, and it's played by the amazing Jonathan Majors, who was in Lovecraft County. He was also in that great movie, The Last Black Man in San Francisco, and he's fantastic in it. His performance is so good. I was reading an interview with him where he went to clown school in somewhere. I think he may have said the Bay Area. He went to clown school, and he said he used all of his clown school training as his performance as He Who Remains. And I think his performance, you could totally tell it. He's always smiling. He's jumping around. He's using the apple. Yeah. He's really active with the apple.
I didn't like it. It didn't make sense for the character to be like doing what he does. He would have to be a very serious person.
Well, no, Jack, he usually would be.
He's like a total nut job.
Jack, I think he was serious when he started, but the thousands upon thousands of years he's been there alone have made him crazy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I understand that part, but then, like, if he actually is important and that the TVA is not just its own self-ruling thing at this point, which. The ending makes it seem obvious that, you know, he has to run the whole show still. It seems like, you know, if he was that crazy, it wouldn't work.
Well, that's just that version, too.
Extremely, like, meticulous shit. Well, according to him, until what happens, that is the only version of him.
No, I know, exactly. But I'm saying that the other ones we're going to encounter in all the future movies is going to be a completely different character. I really loved his performance. Chaz, you could do your thoughts on it. I thought he did swim in the river of ham, which I've mentioned before. It was very hammy, but for me, that worked. I thought it was great. I like a little bit of ham with my comic book dinner. I'm all about it.
Yeah. I think it's important to note that he doesn't come right out and say, like, he's definitely Kang, for sure. But it's important to note that he did not say he's Nathaniel Richards or any form of any other alias that Kang normally uses, other than describing himself as a conqueror. So I'm wondering, his look actually looks way more like Wakandan inspired, right? Than I would say anything else, down to the technology even that he uses when he's talking about his whole history. What if he ends up being a descendant, sort of Black Panther's line in this universe instead of
Reed Richards? Yeah,
right. Which would be
kind of awesome.
Cool.
It would be kind of cool. His outfit was very that's right in the money, Chaz. That is.
Yeah. So I thought that was kind of neat. But I do like too that his origin story is very much Council of Reeds from Hickman's FF. Like
yes,
but with war instead of cool shit.
Well, yeah, and my reason I brought that up is I'm on Reddit quite a bit. You guys can find me on there. It's my same as my Twitter handle. But there is a bunch of people on the Marvel spoilers thing freaking out because they're like, if he's black, they're going to make the Fantastic Four black. And all these people are having, you know,
what?
Person of color good. Panics. Because in the comics, Kang is...
He's blue.
No, but he's well, actually white. In the comics, he's white. But he's the...
Okay.
He might be the great descendant of Reed Richards because his name's Nathaniel Richards, but he also might be the descendant of Victor Von Doom. Neither is ever confirmed in the comics. They leave it vague on purpose. But what I'm saying is he's from the 31st century, so he's from 1,000 years of when we're alive now. And like I told Chaz earlier, these people are not very smart because me, you, and Chaz, three cis white males, could definitely have people of color be our descendants in 1,000 years. I mean, yeah, not only is it possible, it's likely. It's very likely.
Yeah.
So I don't know how people that are like 1,000 years separation, they're going to freak out and think that. I'm like, what? What is your brain?
Maybe
think?
He was Reed Richards' adopted son.
True.
Maybe Reed Richards. But 1,000 years, it could even go the other way around. Like, you know what I mean? Well, like, even, it's so far.
Even like one generation, if he had a baby with an African American woman, it would still be like darker skin. Another generation with another, that baby had an African American partner. You know, that child would be pretty dark.
Or it could be like Reed's relative 500 years in the future ended up having an African-American wife and he's descended from that, or even 800 years in the future. You know what I mean? 1,000 years is so far in the future.
It
would
have to be like a super long-term thing, though, even.
Yeah.
Like, it's not... It wouldn't be weird.
And I just don't understand why they're panicking.
Richards is black either. Like,
I have a feeling it's actually...
Really. I'm fine with that, too.
I don't care either, right? I would love Lakeith Stanfield, Reed Richards, another Oakland... I'm just going to start throwing out
pretty wild.
I'm just going to start casting Reed Richards as people from Oakland or San Francisco only. Lakeith Stanfield would be a great Reed Richards also. But I'm just going to call it now, guys. I think it is John Krasinski and Emily Blunt. I think they've just signed NDAs. I think that's why Emily Blunt was so aggressive when asked the question on Howard Stern, being like, I don't even like Marvel movies. The only one I liked was Iron Man. Because they're going to announce that shit next month for the 60th anniversary and everyone has to act surprised. But if you ever notice in Marvel Comics, they kind of draw the characters more like the actors and they do it usually before the movies come out. And like Reed Richards,
makes sense. Yeah.
Reed Richards has been more and more looking like John Krasinski over the last 2 years that it's almost hard to deny that he's starting to look more like John Krasinski.
Every issue, they like...
Yeah, he's like a little bit more like John Krasinski. Yeah. I'm like...
Okay, now this issue, make the nose a little bit more like...
Make
this.
A little wider. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean...
Krasinski-ish.
I still hope it's Dan Stevens, because I know he's been meeting with Marvel all the time for a project. A lot of people say it's for Magneto, but I feel like, why would they be casting Magneto yet? They don't even have a director for the Mutants movie, which is supposedly called Mutants instead of X-Men. They should really get a better title. I'm just telling Marvel right now, like, just go for House of X or something, or Age of X, or something like that. Don't go Mutants. That's just, it does not, I know
bold.
They don't want to use X-Men.
Rebooting it again so that they can, like,
well, yeah, cause it's gonna,
into the universe?
Yeah, they're going to be in the MCU because they own the characters again. But, I mean, they don't want to use the name X-Men for multiple reasons. One, because of the 20th Century Fox X-Men, and also because... A lot of people don't like the title of X-Men because there's so many woman mutants, which is semantics, but I mean, I think they're just trying. X-Team, or I think House of X or Age of X or Dawn of X, like in the comics, Dawn of X is a perfect name because it'd be like the Dawn of Mutants, but just the Mutants is a terrible name. Sorry, Kevin.
it's pretty plain. Stevens would make a pretty good Reed, but I think he would actually make a pretty good Doctor Doom.
You'd make a better Doctor Doom, probably.
If super hot take, I know it. But Fantastic Four would be better as a show than a movie.
No, I agree with you. You've had this take for a while. And I thought about it more after you said it. And like every Fantastic Four run I've ever read and love, there's no way any of those stories could be in a movie. They'd have to do like
they're
five parts.
Too long or too short. And the theme of exploration is so present, like prevalent in every Fantastic Four thing. That, like, having an episode where they could go to the negative zone, and then the next episode, go fight the Mad Thinker?
Yeah.
Cool. I'm into it.
I think
that... Maybe they should do a movie, then into a show. Sorry, I know they've talked about this before, too. I think that might be the best solution, which they've done already with all these other properties.
I think it'll be interesting to see how they solve the issue of noodle arms never looking good in film.
They have enough money now. I think they can make it look kind of
you think
kind of
enough
better.
Money can make noodle arms and look good.
Technology. I think technology is the real factor, right? Like, we're finally getting these shows and these movies because it's cheap enough to do the special effects.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, could do one of those blue screen backgrounds for wherever they're anyway. Going. Oh yeah, they could still could. They could throw money at whatever, at the spaghetti on the wall all day long to see what would work. But
I was just thinking how insane it was to see Marvel, like, or to see how the evolution of like comic book movies go from, like, you know, DC making like the good comic book movies, and then Marvel picked up the slack and started making the good ones. And then, like, really kicked it into gear and started the MCU, and then Disney, but they still weren't, like, putting a lot out, and then Disney bought them, and now it's, like, you know, or at least when theaters were open, it was, like, there was always a Marvel movie dominating the theaters, and now there's, like, 6 Marvel TV shows in the last year or something?
There's 3.
Like, oh, what? I thought
but there we was... have... We have literally like 5 more on the horizon.
We do.
Okay.
Like that are already announced or in pre-production.
We have Hawkeye coming out in October and November too this year.
What if right now on the heels of Loki. Yeah. So what if Hawkeye, Ms. Marvel, She-Hulk, Moon Knight, Loki season 2.
Secret Invasion.
Armor Wars. So that's 8 already.
Yeah.
And 8.
Just shows with 5-6 movies peppered in between.
Yeah.
All of that.
I'm really excited for Eternals too, which I almost forget about because all these other movies are coming out. But that movie looks really cool. And Chloe Zhao, I like how she kind of looks like she's got her director of photography, which I know she does have because it's usually her, I think. It looks more like her kind of movies instead of like the Marvel look, which is nice.
So let me say this about Eternals, and this is also, I think, a good segue back into what we were talking about with the multiverse and X-Men. Eternals, I want to be excited for. I really do. But what the fuck were they doing during all of the shit that went down over the last, like, 8 movies? You know what I mean? Like, how am I supposed to be like, this is the motherfucking new super team? Hell yeah. And they didn't even show up when New York is about to get destroyed by fucking super crazy aliens. Or when Thanos destroys half the universe. Or when he comes back to Earth to fight literally every hero in the Marvel Universe. They're like, oh man, fucking can't get involved in this. But you know what? Now we will. Now we know Thanos isn't a threat, and you guys aren't going to realize that he's kind of distantly related to us. So, we're here. We're on the scene. You know what I mean? Like, it's a weird, like, I can't feel endeared to them.
Is there any way it could make sense that they, like...
Well, they're going to have a reason for them coming out of hiding, but I have no idea what it could possibly be if they didn't come out.
What?
I
mean, what's bigger than that, right? Like, I don't know. And it's the same with, like, X-Men, right? Like, if they were like, oh, by the way, we've always been here, but, like, shit sucks for us, like, mutants, so we just figured y'all could sort it out, and if you couldn't, we'd clean up. You know what I mean? Like,
you told me you had a hot take about X-Men and Fantastic Four and the multiverse, so that is, if you're going into that, I'm excited.
That's this take, which would be that they need to merge them from some alternate universe where these other events have not happened.
I agree.
Because I can't get behind characters that sat out these big events, right? And if at the time the outside forces are legally they could not, I get that as like production issues, right? But if the story is root for these guys now that they're out and they're here, they're fighting for you, and all I'm supposed to think is like, but they didn't earlier when it really mattered.
Yeah, like if
you know what I mean?
Yeah, if Reed Richards is the smartest man in the universe, why the hell wasn't he helping out Tony Stark and Bruce Banner with all that shit going on? Why this?
I'm worried. So like with Marvel already being so confusing with like the timeline where you actually have to look at a timeline to know what order to watch all the movies in for them to make sense. Like, I wonder if...
If you read comics, it's easy.
Okay, yeah, no, but anyway, so I'm wondering if, like, the multiverse is going to make, make it turn out like the fucking Zelda timeline where it literally just makes no fucking sense unless you like have a graph.
Yeah.
Like,
you mean
you're like, so this
the
is-
Zelda timeline where you're like, well, if he stays a kid, then it's this timeline. But if he goes away for a long time, then it's that timeline. And then he comes back.
And they didn't come out in chronological order. There's four different universes.
Yeah.
In each of those universes, there's several games with him at different ages. Some of them including time travel.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah.
So that was my hot take, was that the multiverse needs to be used to restore these characters to this universe.
I feel like it's why they did it, right? I feel like it has to be.
I can't get on board with them.
Yeah. I think it might be one of the reasons they're doing that now, right? It's got
to
be.
The only way that they'll be able to make more like Captain America besides like Captain and the Captain America show is to like reboot the whole MCU, which doesn't seem like they're anywhere near.
No, they're doing a four starring Anthony Mackie.
Yeah, they're more focused on legacy than they are on reboot, I think. Yeah. Like they're really leaning into the idea that somebody else can pick up these things. Somebody else can become the next one.
There's a great
Which
series
I,
right now
honestly,
out about it. Yeah.
I honestly thought that Sylvie was going to be our new Loki. That when they got the big offer about staying in charge, that Tom Hiddleston was going to stay and basically be the man at the end of time, protecting the existence of the multiverse so that others like him could continue to exist. You could make the change for yourself whenever you wanted to, and that Sylvie would sort of be the Loki of the movies, in a way, if you will. It's what I was kind of hoping for. They're gearing up so many legacy characters right now that there needs to be a mantle passed for him too, kind of.
Yeah, that
he's immortal, so they like don't really need to for it.
Nah, but
like,
and there's
they
a season,
can't give them that much money. You know what I mean?
Well, and spoiler alert: the reason that doesn't happen is there's a second season coming in early 2023.
Yeah, I was wondering if it was gonna. It looked like it was gonna be a short series, like a mini series at first.
Jack, you didn't watch the like, post credits, dude.
Closer and closer. No,
shame
not at
on
the
you.
End, not at the end of the episode. You could tell by like before the credits even roll.
I'm
like,
just kidding.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm saying like up until like episode 5, I was like, is this gonna be a miniseries or is it gonna like continue?
I feel like halfway through episode 6, I knew the def. I heard there was a second season, but halfway through the whole confrontation with He Who Remains, I kind of was like, this is setting up way too much.
Yeah. It would have been over a lot quicker if that was it.
Do you think that? So basically what happens at the end is, which we haven't really gotten to, is He Who Remains offers the Lokis a deal that either take his place because he's tired and guard this one universe, the one sacred timeline, so that variants of himself, which are evil versions like King the Conqueror, won't come and start the multiversal war.
There might be some good ones in the mix too.
There's an infinite
variety.
Yeah. Or they can kill him and cause all these variants to be unleashed and start a multiversal war.
Or maybe he was the evil one all along. No, then there wouldn't be a show.
There's no way. Well, no, there's no way of knowing.
Yeah.
So they do. They kill him.
Yeah.
But beforehand,
well, Sylvie
does. Pushes
Loki.
Yeah, Sylvie pushes Loki through a door. Out of the end of time and back into the TVA.
That's the moment I was talking about earlier where Loki decides to stand up for everyone's kind of good, the making sure everyone in the universe is safe. He kind of doesn't want her to kill He Who Remains so that the multiverse and universe and sacred timeline aren't in danger from all these crazy variants. And then they fight and finally kiss because there's a romance between them, which we've kind of hinted at before. And then, yeah, she throws him through a door.
Out into the universe, right on his ass.
I can't believe you didn't like Jonathan Majors, Jack. I thought he was so good. I just love also when he gets murked by Sylvie and he goes, I'll see you again real soon.
Yeah, that was cool. I didn't hate it. I just thought it wouldn't have been.
I mean, it's purposely over the top. It's definitely over the top. I like over the top bad guys. I think, like I said, any bad guy can swim in the river.
Yeah, well, he's over the. It's over the top no matter what. Like his role itself, like just the character is over the top. But clowning around so much, you know?
Well, literally, he went to clown school, so and that's what he used to.
Like, being so, like, crazy. Like, there's nothing wrong with a crazy bad guy. It makes sense. But, like, that crazy with him being this dude who's supposed to literally control the entire multiverse and all of time makes no sense.
You don't think the Joker could control the multiverse?
That's a lot of responsibility.
That's stressful.
No, I don't think the Joker could control the entire multiverse in all of time.
I don't think he was always like that, though. The implication, which you can even read about, is he got crazy from being there for so long and having to do all that stuff.
Yeah. Which does make
sense. And everybody blames you. I mean, just blames you. Got a whole army of Lokis upset that they got pruned because they're too good or too bad.
You're talking to a clock face with a voice.
You just don't need that stress.
I'm sorry. You're talking to a Tara Strong voice. Clock face is your only friend.
Yeah. So, speaking of the ending, Sylvie does it, kills him, right? Loki, I gotta go tell my best bud, Mobius M. Mobius, what's up? I just came back. We stopped him. But shit's about to get real wild. Only to find out they don't fucking remember him. And we get that cool Planet of the Apes ending where he looks out onto the TVA and instead of the statue of three different timekeepers, we've got one very Kang the Conqueror classic looking statue. That was actually a really sad scene for me when Mobius doesn't recognize him.
Yeah, because they have a great relationship. It's
really good, yeah. The whole line right before, like, their last interaction is, well, I didn't get a catch you this time or whatever. What's he say? Catch you later.
Yeah.
Like, the classic cop and a crook working together. Yeah. I'll let you go because I'll catch you. That's how we keep this relationship going. The cat and mouse game. So it was real sad. But do you think... for me, the implication is either another Kang showed up right away and started like, boop, I went back, I put myself in that position, I'm in charge, and I changed everything, right?
Well, or Kang can, sorry, go ahead.
Sylvie, in pushing him through that door, threw him into another multiverse, and that's why they don't recognize him. And that'll actually protect Loki so that he can then do... the thing to get back to that spot where he can kill him again, maybe. Or save everybody again. So do you think it's either a Kang has reset the time, he traveled back, conquered everything, and everything is the same because it's time travel, so he could have done it in the blink of an eye for us. Or that the multiverse exists still, it hasn't been fractured and pruned back down to one sacred timeline.
Well, we see
Loki's just existing in a different one.
We see on their map when they don't recognize Loki that there's thousands upon thousands of multiverse branches.
Are they looking at it?
Yeah,
or was that prior to Loki coming back to tell him?
It's the same scene. It's when they're looking at it and he walks up to them.
I thought they were looking at it and then it cut to the Sylvie Loki fight again. He gets pushed out and then says, they're coming, they're coming. And
they're
like, whoa, you're
an
analyst or whatever.
Yeah.
So.
Because they do like for all time, always. It's not one of the branches. It's Loki's universe, but Kang traveled back in time in that universe and completely changed it.
That's what I'm saying. Is it either that, so they're in the process of creating another sacred timeline? Or is he just existing on a different branch and that will.
He's a different branch. I would say different branch. Yeah, I think it's a different branch then.
So Sylvie was still you doing an act of love in sending Loki away.
If it was intentional, yeah. I don't know if because I think that the way I see it is it was the part of the universe where Loki was from, but now since it's split off and no longer the sacred timeline, that universe changed because it's just a branch
but
now.
I think regardless. She threw him through the door instead of killing him to not kill him. So
yeah,
that was an act.
Very true.
I'm just thinking if it's that timeline and there's already another Kang in position, he's not going to let that Loki live knowing the secret.
Would he know, though?
I mean, presumably, if he went back and changed time, he'd have access to all of those files. He could read them at their leisure.
Well, I feel like
he could have minutes tell him everything.
Well, I think Kang's separate from that version of whoever Kang is in this universe. So, I mean, because remember he said there was an infinite amount of him. Some are conquerors, some are scientists. So I think the conqueror one doesn't even know the existence of the variant of himself that is he who remains.
And if he did, he
probably knew him as a scientist, not as he who remains.
He'd see it as a vacuum. The minute that he pops in there, he looks exactly like he who remains, except for maybe minor differences in clothes. Miss Minutes is going to talk to him about anything he wants to know. And as a conqueror, if I have access to all of time's history and files...
True that now is hinting that Kang is who created the TVA now, so...
Right. So, yeah. Why did they not recognize Loki? You know what I mean? If I was Kang, and I showed up and saw Sylvie standing over the body of another version of me, exactly. And then there's detailed files on Loki chasing down this Sylvie, other variant.
I think it was to
protect him somehow.
Yeah.
I was thinking that what it sounded like was that there was like this, he was essentially saying like a war between all these different universes. The different Kangs from all these different universes were in war with each other and all had their own TVA.
Because Kang doesn't have a TVA. Kang is just a conqueror. TVA. So in the comics, Kang has nothing to do with the TVA.
In the show he does.
Well, no.
And in the show he says.
In the show, that's not Kang. So this is why they don't call him Kang, is because he's not Kang. He's a variant of whoever this is, whether it's Nathaniel Richards or not. It's kind of like a Mortis. Kang's the evil version that's trying to conquer the universe. The TVA was created to stop Kang. So...
You don't think that each of them had a version to stop the other version of him?
Yeah, but they might not be the same because they're all different versions. Like it's only that version.
But if there's an infinite amount of universes, there's an infinite amount of TVA.
I wouldn't think so. I feel like that could happen again, but I don't think it's every universe. I feel like maybe you get your random occurrence.
Not every universe. What I'm saying is that I think there may possibly be multiple TVAs out there.
Sure.
And who knows which one Loki's in.
Yeah.
Sure. And, I agree with you on that. Yeah.
Yeah. And that we're not just looking at one bad guy, he who remains, but a bunch of them all fighting each other and Loki's stuck in the middle.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, Jonathan Majors.
Yeah, I think that's what... I read yesterday that the writer of Loki also said that he wrote the show up into that point, not knowing what's going to happen next and just passing it off. And he's going to give it to another writer and he's going to go over and write Star Wars. He said he thought it was actually funny. Yeah, he's going to go write a new Star Wars
movie. I don't think so, because I just read yesterday he's working on season 2.
Is he? Yeah. Okay, well, it must have been at some earlier point that he said that then.
Yeah.
Or he was just trolling.
I'm looking at his filmography. I mean, I read some Michael Logan. No, he wrote Doctor Strange in the multiverse, and then he's writing Loki season 2. He also wrote the multiverse movie with Doctor Strange. He's not doing anything with Star Wars.
Yep.
No, yeah. He was hired to write the screenplay for Kevin Feige's untitled Star Wars film, while also signing an overall deal with Disney.
Ah,
wild.
I think he's still doing season 2, though.
Unfortunately, we're getting more Star Wars, but...
I don't know. It's a wild show. Let's put it that way. And now that we've covered a bit of the ending, what's the one thing you want to see more than anything in season 2? For me, I want to see Owen Wilson get on a goddamn jet ski and go, wow.
I also want to see Owen Wilson get on a jet ski and go, wow. Real quick, Jack, it is a rumor. He might stick into it. He's going to write more Marvel movies, but he did post something yesterday that said end of file, so people think he might be leaving to do the Star Wars movie.
Okay. Yeah. It's evidently not confirmed. Somewhere at some point, I saw a quote going around saying that pretty much he thought it was fun ending the Loki not knowing what was going to happen next and passing it off to other writers.
He looks like he reads a lot of comic books, this guy. I'm sure he has. He looks like one of our elk.
That he do.
Anywho, I'd like them to see in the next series next season what I really like.
I'd also
explain how it makes sense that you can
just leave it right there. Just leave it. Yeah, but no, just make sense.
I mean, also the real point of this show, everyone listening, is it's really enjoyable and it's a great ride. So, I mean, if you're not questioning how it all works, you're going to have a really fun time with it. I want to end my thing, real last note about the show, is I'd also be okay with Mobius and Mobius being a variant of Reed Richards. I'd be okay with that too.
All right, so then we'd have Owen Wilson as Reed Richards. We'd have Vince Vaughn doing the voice and mocap for of the thing.
I'm down.
Yeah. I'm down. Anybody for Sue Storm, I'm sure it'd be great. And then who could play off of those two well?
Owen Wilson and Vince Vaughn in the fucking Fantastic Four. That would be amazing.
Yeah. I'm super into that.
I'm trying to think of someone good now, too, that's younger. I would rather have Johnny be like Tom Holland's age, so I'm trying to think young.
Yeah, that's the tough part, is like they gotta have a balance, right? The older, wiser, but then the young hothead.
I mean, if he wasn't young, I'd go with Glenn Powell, who's a kind of, not everyone knows who he is. He was on Scream Queens. He's like a young comedic actor. I think he'd be funny with those guys, but I think he's way too old. He's like my age, so he's too old for Johnny, in my opinion. Johnny needs to be like 20. I mean, they might not do that, but I think that's the best way to go, because he's got to, you know, he's got to be, so John Watts is
directing
Fantastic Four.
They'll get a 32-year-old.
Yeah. John Watts is directing Fantastic Four, so you know they're going to put Spidey and Human Torch together. You know they are. So you got to have someone that's going to, I mean,
play
if you
well
were blonde, I'm trying to think of a comedian.
Now with Owen Wilson and the Fantastic Four, I want to see the Fantastic Four directed by Wes Anderson.
That
as like a dysfunctional family type movie.
There's that great Wes Anderson directed X-Men skit. That's fantastic.
Yeah. It's really good.
I have not seen that. I'm going to look that
up. So yeah, we would love Owen Wilson and Vince Vaughn Fantastic Four. If you guys want to tell us who you think would make a good Sue and good Johnny Storm, anyone you know, Chaz? I still can't think of a young comedic actor,
man,
that's crushing it.
It's that's the hardest part, man. I don't know.
I mean, Dustin from Stranger Things, but that's a wild casting call for Johnny Storm.
I don't like it. He's in. It's no. Like we're trying to just shove a round peg in every hole. You know what I mean? We gotta find the right fit for him. And maybe it's just Stranger Things. I don't know.
Yeah, we got to find that nice, really hilarious. There's got to be... Oh, you know who would be great? Jack Dylan Grazer. He doesn't really look like Johnny Storm, but he's really funny. The kid from Shazam and It. The funny kid.
Oh, yeah. He's pretty good.
He did have blonde hair, too, in that really good HBO show, which I can't remember the name of it right now. But I think he looked normal with blonde hair in that. They could just dye his hair blonde. I think Jack Dylan Grazer. Owen Wilson, Jack Dylan Grazer, Vince Vaughn, and... We can't do Rachel McAdams because we got to do someone age appropriate for Owen Wilson, though. You can't cast a 25-year-old with him anymore. I mean, you can. Hollywood still does it with Tom Cruise, but I don't know if MCU is going to put a 55-year-old guy with a 25-year-old. I mean, maybe.
Also, I mean, Hollywood's best probably plastic surgeons are working around the clock to keep Tom Cruise looking as 25 as they can. Not saying it works, but
it might just be genetics too.
Well, no, you can see over time, like watching his movies, his face just becoming more and more plastic.
Yeah. I like Tom Cruise though. His movies.
I'm not saying
it's
I don't like him. I'm just saying that he has had a lot of plastic surgery. I watched that really
he's
bad
freed all
Minority
his thetans,
Report.
Jack, that's what it is.
I love Minority Report.
Yeah, Minority Report's
Minority
pretty
Report's
good.
Awesome.
It's a great movie.
It's just that, like, the movie's pretty cheesy.
I think it's dark.
Oh, okay.
It is dark. It's cheesy, based off a really good book.
Philip K. Dick.
Yeah, by Philip K. Dick.
Yeah, the book's way different.
Yeah.
The book's way different.
Yeah,
I love
well,
Philip K.
Dick,
too.
It's a really short book. So.
Yeah, it's actually about minorities.
Yeah, that's true.
Unlike the movie, which is not about minorities at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
regardless, I thought the movie was good. The book is very good. I just thought that it was also cheesy.
So what you guys should do is you guys should shout out to us your Fantastic Four picks and who you think would be good reads, Johnny, Suze, and Ben Grimm. My Ben Grimm choice is still Emery Cohen from the OA. I think he's from Brooklyn, he's Jewish, and he has that perfect Ben Grimm voice, and I just want to hear him say Yancey Street and Clobbering Time, because in my mind, that's what Ben Grimm sounds like. That nasally kind of voice from Brooklyn. But you can always find us on Twitter at OutsideThe with a zero. You can find me as PoetAir33 on Twitter and on Reddit. Come on the Marvel boards and yell at me about some Marvel nonsense on Reddit. And also, you can always join our Discord. The link is posted on our social media on Twitter. And then you can find us also on YouTube, which we will be posting more stuff there soon at Outside the Pages. And where can they find you guys?
You can find me on Twitter as well at Chaz Simons. And just to piggyback on what Michael was saying, I also want to hear your season 2 Loki predictions. So tweet at Outside the with the zero in the front what you want to see happen in the second season of Loki.
And you can find me at sin_aesthetics with an X on Twitter. And I want to piggyback off what both of you guys have said and have you guys add us at Outside the Page, Outside the on Twitter, to tell us what you want to see Owen Wilson do in the next season of Loki.
I think everyone's say jet ski. I just can't wait to see who he's a variant of.
Yeah.
Besides jet ski,
I want to know.
My wife just sent me the Demon Slayer season 2 trailer that dropped.
Ooh.
All right.
When does it come out?
I know what I'm doing.
Yeah. It comes out in September, I think. It's literally the whole season is just the night. This your favorite art, Jack, is the whole season.
Fuck yeah.
The whole season is just Red Light District, yeah.
Wait, when did you say October?
Aww.
September.
Cool.
I think what they're doing is Red Light District and then another movie. From what I've heard, it's going to split it up. I guess they're going to do Gunsmith Village as a...
Swordsmith
Village?
Right? I hope so.
It looks fucking it looks awesome. Sick, dude.
Also, Tatsuki dropped a 140-page one-shot today about manga artists.
Mangakos. Fucking crushed me.
Yeah, I haven't read it yet. It's good?
It's incredible, but it fucked me up for like the whole day.
Oh,
check that out.
Hi, Justina. Sorry, I see her off camera. Anyhow, definitely give us all your thoughts on all those things. And I'll end it saying, remember to rate, review, and subscribe, and King was right. Take us out, Chaz.
Wow. Turn the page and wash your hands.